I'm ready to serve my country and go with my unit to the Persian Gulf. When I get back, I don't want to be discharged because I'm a lesbian.
No blood for oil! Bring the troops home!
Well, I must say, I think that's a bit of an old chestnut.
Welcome to This Way Out, the international lesbian and gay radio magazine. I'm Greg Gordon. Cupid's arrows hit their mark at the Brazil Supreme Court, a Euro plan for partner parity presses forward, and a U.S. military milestone remains a millstone for queer service members. All that and more this week, now that you've discovered This Way Out.
I'm Christopher Gall.
And I'm Cindy Friedman.
With NewsWrap, a summary of some of the news in or affecting the lesbian and gay community for the week ending February 15, 2003. In the week of Valentine's Day, partnerships dominated gay and lesbian news. Brazil's Supreme Court on Valentine's Day issued a ruling affirming the rights of gays and lesbians to inherit their deceased partners' social security benefits and pensions as legally married spouses do. The High Court upheld a June 2000 ruling by a federal judge in the state of Rio Grande do Sul. The failed appeal was brought to the Supreme Court by Brazil's National Institute of Social Security, INSS. In the interim, dozens of gays and lesbians had succeeded in accessing their late partners' INSS pensions, but many others had been denied them by their local offices.
The European Parliament this week endorsed an expanded definition of family that includes same-gender couples. By a 9% margin, the EP approved a committee's proposal including mutual recognition of gay and lesbian partnerships among member states of the European Union. ILGA, the International Lesbian and Gay Association, has lobbied hard for the move, and its European co-chair Kurt Krickler explained that if the policy is adopted, it would remove the main obstacles hindering lesbian, gay, bisexual, transgender citizens from exercising their right of residence and free movement. The current lack of mutual recognition can interfere with a partner's obtaining a residence permit when a couple relocates and can even pose a barrier to hospital visitation. While this week's vote by the directly elected EP is an important step, the directive still needs the approval of the EU's appointed Council of Ministers.
Numerous demonstrations for equal marriage rights for same-gender couples were held across North America this week in coordinated actions for Valentine's Day and the U.S. 5th Annual National Freedom to Marry Day, observed February 12th. In Mexico City, gays and lesbians held their annual public mass wedding ceremony, a celebratory demonstration for legal recognition of their partnerships. Mexico City's own legislature has for some time been considering a bill to create registered partnerships for same-gender couples with the same city-level benefits as heterosexual couples.
Across Canada and the U.S., in addition to demonstrations and press conferences, a number of gay and lesbian couples applied for marriage licenses and were denied them. This happened at 120 sites in the U.S., including Berkeley, Oakland, and Los Angeles in California, Pueblo County, Colorado, Omaha, Nebraska, Trenton, New Jersey, Northampton County, Pennsylvania, Minnehaha County, South Dakota, and Hamden, Hartford, Mansfield, and Norwich in Connecticut, where a civil unions measure is being hotly contested in the state legislature.
Canadian gay and lesbian couples were denied marriage licenses at sites including Halifax, Nova Scotia, St. John's, Newfoundland, Moncton, New Brunswick, Montreal, Quebec, Sudbury and Toronto in Ontario, Winnipeg, Manitoba, Saskatoon, Saskatchewan, Calgary, Alberta, and Kelowna, Vancouver, and Victoria in British Columbia.
Equal marriage rights are currently under consideration in Canada, in the courts, and the national legislature. As it happens, this week marked the beginning of hearings in the British Columbia Court of Appeal on a key marriage case, as eight gay and lesbian couples denied marriage licenses in 2001 contest a provincial trial court's finding that current marriage discrimination is justified. Since then, courts in two other provinces have found marriage discrimination unconstitutional, decisions which are also being appealed.
In the wake of those decisions, a committee of the Canadian Parliament has been holding hearings at the request of the Justice Department to consider the status of gay and lesbian couples, including the possibility of full equal marriage rights. But those hearings are not going well. Justice Committee Chair Andy Scott this week had to call for members to express themselves with restraint, hoping to avoid verbal confrontations that have disrupted the hearings.
Openly gay committee member, New Democratic Party MP from British Columbia, Sven Robinson, was outraged by a Christian group spokesperson's testimony comparing homosexuality to pedophilia and bestiality. He told reporters, "The hearings have too often been steeped in an atmosphere that is abusive, hateful, and full of, in a number of instances, really disturbing allegations about gay and lesbian people." Robinson this week reintroduced in the House of Commons his private member's bill for equal marriage rights, declaring that the relationships of gay and lesbian people are just as committed, just as loving, and just as deserving of recognition through marriage as those of heterosexual couples.
Democratic U.S. Congressmember from New York, Gerald Nadler, chose Valentine's Day to reintroduce his Permanent Partners Immigration Act, which would allow U.S. gays and lesbians to sponsor their foreign partners for immigration as legally married spouses can. It's the third time Nadler has introduced the bill, which has little hope of advancing.
In Hawaii, which was the first U.S. state to recognize same-gender couples, a civil unions bill quietly fell victim to a deadline this week, falling one state senator short of the minimum of 13 supporters needed to advance. The measure did have support from a majority in the House of Representatives.
At the municipal level, the Los Angeles, California City Council unanimously approved an equal benefits ordinance. Effective April 1st, all companies with city contracts of more than $5,000 must extend the same employee benefits to their workers' domestic partners as they do to married workers' legal spouses.
Eugene, Oregon registered domestic partners for the first time on Valentine's Day. Registration does not guarantee any rights or privileges, but does provide a form of certification for employers and others who offer domestic partner benefits.
The Collier County, Florida Commission voted 4-1 to approve a resolution on civil rights, including those of gays and lesbians. But activists were disappointed, since it only calls for county staff to refer discrimination complaints to state or federal authorities. An earlier version would have created a commission to investigate discrimination claims.
Colorado's State Senate Judiciary Committee killed two gay-supportive bills this week on party-line votes, with Democrats supporting the bills and Republicans opposing them. One would have prohibited employment discrimination based on sexual orientation. The other would have added gays and lesbians, as well as seniors and people with disabilities, as victim groups in the state's hate crimes law.
Suspects in two notorious attacks against gay men were arrested this week. In Canada, Vancouver police arrested a suspect in the November 2001 bashing murder of gay Aaron Webster in a cruising area in the city's Stanley Park. That attack sparked demonstrations protesting anti-gay violence, and the long period without an arrest strained what had been a good relationship between the city's gay community and police. Earlier, police revealed they had identified a suspect but lacked enough evidence to arrest him, a situation apparently remedied by tips called in after a TV show about the killing last week. Because the suspect was 17 at the time of the murder, his name will not be released. He's been charged with manslaughter and will face a bail hearing in the coming week. More arrests in the case are expected.
In South Africa, police arrested two men for last month's massacre at the Sizzler's gay massage parlor in Cape Town that left 9 men dead and a 10th seriously wounded. Police say both suspects, whose names have not yet been published, made full confessions before a magistrate, with robbery the apparent motive. The men will make a further court appearance in the coming week. The arrest resulted from overwhelming public response to the release of identikit sketches of the suspects developed with the survivor and other witnesses.
Finland's government this week officially withdrew its bill to clarify policy on fertility treatments, which a parliamentary committee had amended to criminalize provision of those services to lesbians and other women not in a relationship with a man. The government opposes criminalization.
And finally, just last week, the U.S. advocacy group Human Rights Campaign announced that oil giant ConocoPhillips omitted sexual orientation from its non-discrimination policy, even though Conoco had protected gays and lesbians before its August merger with Phillips Petroleum. HRC made that announcement after hearing from a ConocoPhillips spokesperson that the merged entity had no intention of adding sexual orientation to its formal policy until such time as U.S. federal law may be changed to protect gays and lesbians. But faced with the publicity, as well as a shareholder proposal to make the addition to the company's equal employment opportunity policy, this week corporate management issued a statement saying, ConocoPhillips is and always has been deeply committed to fair and non-discriminatory treatment for all employees. The management committee has amended, effective immediately, the company's EEO policy to include the term sexual orientation to more accurately reflect this commitment.
That's News Wrap for the week ending February 15th, 2003, written by Cindy Friedman and recorded at the studios of KPFK Los Angeles.
Follow the news in your area. An informed community is a strong community. For This Way Out, I'm Cindy Friedman.
And I'm Christopher Gall.
Queer musicians throw techno rock at the war machine. Later in the program. This week, the Lesbian and Gay Service Members Legal Defense Network marked the 10th anniversary of the U.S. military's Don't Ask, Don't Tell policy. The SLDN counted more than 7,500 discharges and $250 million spent on implementing the policy it calls the last great wall of anti-gay discrimination in our country. With the number of discharge proceedings against gay and lesbian service members increasing annually since the policy went into effect, it's hard to remember that it was ostensibly instituted to better protect them. Ironically, as thousands of U.S. military personnel are again headed for a possible war with Iraq, it was during the first Gulf War in 1991, more than 2 years before Don't Ask, Don't Tell, that many of the problems faced by gays and lesbians in the U.S. armed services received initial public attention.
The Army's made a man out of me, a man out of me, a man out of me. My mother and my father agree, the Army has made me a man.
As the year began, the United States, technically the United Nations, was just days away from beginning its annihilation of Iraq in the Gulf War.
I'm ready to serve my country and go with my unit to the Persian Gulf. When I get back, I don't want to be discharged because of the fact that I'm a lesbian.
The war in the Middle East has also become a battleground for lesbians and gays in the U.S. military. Army Specialist Donna Lynn Jackson wrote to her commanding officer earlier this month saying, "I am an open lesbian, and I wish to be deployed as such."
I was detached from all my friends. They were very supportive. It was like, no big deal, you know, so you're gay, so what? They wanted me to go with them. Instead, I was pulled out of my unit and attached to this other unit and then processed very quickly for discharge.
February 9th through 18th marked the fourth annual national conference of the Black, Gay, and Lesbian Leadership Forum, held this year in Los Angeles. Phil Wilson, the co-chair, opened the conference.
President Bush vetoes the 1990 Civil Rights Bill and bombs Baghdad in the name of democracy. We must speak. Our government spends $1 billion a day to kill people. But some of us have been in a war for a long time. We have been in a war against a monster more insipid, more dangerous than Saddam Hussein will ever be. This monster lives in our bodies. It is called HIV. Where are the Patriot missiles that will destroy this enemy? Where are the scuds of drugs and treatments we need to fight this enemy? Where are the weapons of health care and cures we need to save the hundreds of thousands of us who are infected with HIV? We must speak.
This is the CBS Evening News. Dan Rather reporting. Good evening. We're going to take a break for a commercial just now.
AIDS activists disrupted national TV coverage of the Persian Gulf War to protest the lack of media coverage of AIDS. Other protesters interrupted taping of the McNeil-Lehrer NewsHour, some chaining themselves to the desk.
Between 300,000 and 500,000 people marched for peace on both coasts of the United States. In Washington, D.C., about 250,000 filled the Capitol Mall. And in San Francisco, AIDS quilt organizer Cleve Jones was one of the featured speakers.
President Bush has given us a lot of reasons for fighting this war as the administration casts about for new ways to market Operation Desert Storm. A war to save our cities, a war to conquer disease, a war to build schools and rescue our children from despair. A war for clean air and water. A war against bigotry and ignorance. A war for parks and playgrounds and homes. These are the wars worth fighting. The wars are here at home in America. No blood for oil. Bring the troops home.
The status of lesbians and gays in the United States Armed Forces remains controversial as fighting in the Gulf enters its second month. Dozens of gays and lesbians in uniform are telling advocacy groups that, despite denials from the military, a so-called stop-loss policy is operating, which delays what would otherwise be immediate discharges until the war is over. Brigadier General M.G. Vergamini, the Defense Department's Director for Manpower and Personnel, has called those reports preposterous and categorically untrue. The policy that homosexuality is incompatible with military service remains in effect. Period.
While most of the troops returning home from the Persian Gulf War were met with parades and celebrations, former United States Marine Corporal Eric E. Barker, the model Marine, receiving high grades for proficiency and conduct, as well as high praise for energy and self-motivation, was being hustled out of the Corps. Barker recounted how, while serving his country in the Saudi Arabian desert, he was accused by another Marine of having committed the crime of sodomy. His commanding officer fired him from his job and stripped him of his ammunition.
Where I worked and where we stayed was there was like a half a mile of open roads that we had to walk to get from the camp to the headquarters building. And anyone, any Arab driver, had access to the roads that we traveled to get over there. And without my ammunition, I was defenseless. They let me keep my rifle, but it's no good without ammunition.
Barker accepted a general discharge, which is less than the unconditional honorable discharge given to other troops returning from the Persian Gulf War theater. Because the Marines refused to allow testimony on his behalf, Barker waived his right to what he believed would be an unfair hearing.
In response to questioning by openly gay Congressman Barney Frank, Secretary of Defense Dick Cheney suggested he disagrees with the military's policy that homosexuals present a security risk.
The defense secretary stressed he inherited rather than formulated the military's policy on homosexuals. Dick Cheney told a House panel that the policy for many years is that a gay lifestyle is incompatible with military service.
There have been times in the past when it's been generated on the notion that somehow there was a security risk involved. Although I must say, I think that's a bit of an old chestnut.
I think that racism, sexism, and homophobia are like three strands in a rope that's placed where women, people of color, and gay men and lesbians are just not allowed to go.
After 5 years of waiting, U.S. Army Captain Dusty Pruitt will finally have her day in court. Pruitt was honorably discharged by the Army in 1986, 3 years after revealing her lesbianism in an interview with the Los Angeles Times. She's mounted a legal challenge to be reinstated, and the U.S. Ninth Circuit Court of Appeals ruled August 19th that the military must prove a rational basis for its 48-year-old ban on gay and lesbian personnel. The court also asserted it would reject the military's traditional tactic of citing existing anti-gay prejudice within its ranks as a rationale for continuing the policy.
Gay men and lesbians are the last legal group of individuals that one can persecute, and people are about doing that with all their might.
Citing a concern over the spread of AIDS, a U.S. federal judge upheld the ban on gays and lesbians in the military.
U.S. District Judge Oliver Gash ruled that the armed forces have the right to ban homosexuals because they pose a high risk of transmitting AIDS to other soldiers. The Pentagon did not request such a ruling. They had asked that the ban on homosexuals be upheld for legal, not medical reasons. Judge Gash turned down a request by Joseph Stefan to reinstate him into the Navy. Stefan was forced to resign from the Naval Academy just before graduation in 1987 when his officers learned of his sexual orientation. Three times during the legal proceedings, Judge Gash referred to Stefan as a homo. Gregory King of the Human Rights Campaign Fund says Gash's ruling is based on bigotry and ignorance.
This is really a serious miscarriage and reflects the lack of information that's held by even intelligent members of our legal profession.
Stefan's attorneys say they'll appeal the judge's ruling. The Pentagon says it will have no comment on the ruling until all appeals are ended.
Together we can find the strength
been listening to excerpts from This Way Out's 1991 coverage of gays and lesbians in the U.S. military, a still unresolved issue that became part of the public debate during what may have only been the first Gulf War.
This is Janice Ian, and you're listening to This Way Out, the International Lesbian and Gay Radio Magazine. For those of us who are already out, stay tuned for the next program.
With cameo performances by queer vocalist Yolanda and gay film director Wolfgang Busch, gay singer-songwriter-producer Robert Urban came out with a new single this week, right in tune with the dramatically reborn peace movement. Urban describes Waiting for Rome to Fall as a Dr. Strangelove among anti-war songs.
I have become death, destroyer of worlds. I have become death, destroyer of worlds. I have become death, destroyer of worlds. I have become death. I have become death, destroyer of worlds.
Looking into all your eyes, I see the fires burning. Pages of our history returning once again. I can see the whole world rock beneath its calm disguise. And I can feel a nuclear shock as it tears apart my mind. And I'm waiting for Rome to fall. waiting.
That was Robert Urban's new single, Waiting for Rome to Fall. For more information, check out his website at www.roberturban.com. Thanks for choosing This Way Out, the International Lesbian and Gay Radio Magazine. This week, Cindy Friedman, Christopher Gall, Graham Underhill, Rex Walkner, Jason Lynn, and Chris Ambidge contributed program material. Michael Callan and Robert Urban performed some of the music you heard, and Kim Wilson composed and performed our theme music. Remember, you can listen to This Way Out anytime online, exclusively on Planet Out. There's a link at our website, thiswayout.org. Some This Way Out operating expenses are funded by direct charitable donations from our listeners. Thank you. To find out how you can help keep This Way Out on the air and get some queer audio history and timeless music in the bargain, please visit our website at thiswayout.org, email us at tworadio@aol.com, or write to us at Post Office Box 38327, Los Angeles, California 90038, USA. For Associate Producer Lucia Chappell and the entire This Way Out family, I'm Greg Gordon. Thank you for listening on KDHX St. Louis, Missouri, WJSC Johnson, Vermont, 5CST Southwest Adelaide, South Australia, and more than 125 other stations around the world, including this community radio station. Stay tuned.